Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing the sixth chapter of the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Prahlad Instructs His Demonic Schoolmates. Continuing with text 25. Tushte chatatra kemala vyamanantadye. King Targuna Vyatikara Dehaye Swasidaha. Dharmadaya Kemanugena Chakang Shetena. Sarang Jusham Charanayor Upagayatat Tamnaha. Tushte tatatra kem alabhyam anantadye. Kem targuna vyatikara dehaye swasiraha. Dharmadaya kem anugena chakangshitena. Sarang jusham charanayor upagayatat tamna. Please chant. Ladies, please. Tuesday, when satisfied. Cha, also. Tatra, that. Kim, what. alabhyam, unobtainable, anante, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, adye, the original source of everything, the cause of all causes, kim, what need, tai, with them, guna vyatikarat, due to the actions of the modes of material nature, yaha, in this world, ye, which, swasiddhaha, automatically achieved, dharma adayaha, the three principles of material advancement, namely religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Kim, what need? Anugena, with liberation into the Supreme. Cha, and Kangshitena, desired. Saram, essence. Drusham, relishing. Charanayoho, of the two lotus feet of the Lord. Upagayatam, who glorify the qualities of the Lord. Naha, translate, I'm sorry, of us. Translation. Nothing is unobtainable for devotees who have satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes, the original source of everything. The Lord is the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities. For devotees, therefore, who are transcendental to the modes of material nature, what is the use of following the principles of religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, which are all automatically obtainable under the influence of the modes of nature? We devotees always glorify the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore we need not ask for anything in terms of dharma, kama, artha, and moksha. Purport. In an advanced civilization, people are eager to be religious, to be economically well-situated, to satisfy their senses to the fullest extent, and at last to attain liberation. However, these are not to be magnified as desirable. Indeed, for a devotee, these are all very easily available. Bhava Mangala Thakur said, Mukti Swayam Mulu, I'm sorry, Mukulitanjali Sevate Smandar Marta Kama Gayataha Samaya Pratikshaha. Liberation always stands at the door of a devotee, ready to carry out his orders. Material advancement in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation simply wait to serve a devotee at the first opportunity. A devotee is already in a transcendental position. He does not need further qualifications to be liberated. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:26, Sagunan Samatitaitan Brahmabhuyaya Kalpate. A devotee is transcendental to the actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature because he is situated on the Brahman platform. Prahlad Maharaj said, Agunena cha kangshitena. If one is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the lotus feet of the Lord, he does not need anything in terms of dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. In Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, in the beginning of the transcendental literature, it is said, dharma projita kaitavotra. Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are kaitava, false and unnecessary. Nirmatsaranam. Persons who are completely transcendental to the material activities of separateness, who make no distinction between mine and yours, but who simply engage in the devotional service of the Lord, are actually fit to accept Bhagavat Dharma, Dharman Bhagavataniha, because they are nirmatsara, not jealous of anyone. They want to make others devotees, even their enemies. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya remarks, Kangshate mokshagam api sukam na kangshato yata. Devotees are not desirous of any material happiness, including the happiness derived from liberation. This is called anyabhilashita sunyam, jnana karmadinavitam. Karmis desire material happiness and jnanis desire liberation, but a devotee does not desire anything. He is simply satisfied by rendering transcendental loving service at the lotus feet of the Lord and glorifying Him everywhere by preaching, which is His life and soul. Om Jnana Timirandasya Agnanjana Shalaka Chakshur Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Maha Namang Vishnu Padai Krishna Sabudali Shimate Paladananda Swaitone Namang Vishnu Padai Krishna Sabudali Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swaitone Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shuni Vadya Paschyate Adesha Tarane. These instructions by Prahlad Maharaj are so profound. It contains so much. I mean, even in just this one verse alone, it contains such a very deep understanding. One thing that initially struck me about what Prahlad Maharaj is saying, which actually ties in very well with the recent month that just passed, that of Kartik, is just like in the Damodarasticum. You know, Mother Yashoda was allowed by Damodar to bind his belly with ropes, with a rope used for tying cows. And this is so amazing because from Damodar's belly, from Krishna's navel, comes the entire universe, which from our perspective is basically limitless. And yet the whole universe is contained within his belly. And here Mother Yashoda is being allowed by Krishna to bind his belly with rope, which is really inconceivable. You know, how can you bind the limitless with some limited piece of rope? But yet, having bound that, having captured that, what more is there to desire? What more is there to want? Everyone here in the material world is struggling after different things, struggling after, as it says here, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. These are the things that drive the material world. All the material desires, all the sense gratification, all the prestige, honor, recognition, wealth, it all comes from these things. People engage in dharma and religious activities, mundane religious activities, to achieve wealth, artha. Religion brings wealth. And from artha, what can you do? You can satisfy your senses. Satisfying your senses costs money. And then once you've had enough of trying to satisfy your senses, and your senses get burnt out, because the senses are very limited. They can only be used so much before they stop gratifying us with temporary material pleasure. And then once our senses get burnt out, then we desire liberation. Oh, I've had enough of this. It's no longer fun anymore. So let me desire a greater sense gratification. Let me become God. Moksha. That's people's idea of moksha. Let me be one with the universe. But the underlying principle behind all of this is ahankar. It's false ego. I am the doer. I am the controller. I am the master, proprietor, controller of everything that I survey, everything that I come in contact with. That's really the underlying thing here. Because everyone is trying to dominate and manipulate and control this material energy. Because we all have some desire, we all have some want, some need. We feel that we're missing something. And that feeling of lack is what drives all these other desires. We desire because we need. because we're incomplete. Whereas devotees, those who have dedicated, who have surrendered to Krishna, and more importantly, those who have actually satisfied Krishna, they no longer need anything. Why is this? How is it that devotees who have satisfied Krishna don't need anything? Well, Krishna allowed himself to be bound by Mother Yashoda. All of these different desires, the whole realm of desires, is contained within the universe. And the universe is composed of the interactions of the three modes of material nature. And yet this entire universe was bound with a rope by Mother Yashoda. She had control over all of it simply by satisfying Krishna. You know, so she got more than just the sum total of everything in the entire material world. Because even if you manage to gain by your own dominance and assertion of your authority and power, even if you manage, like Hiranyakashipu, to assert dominance and dominion over the entire material world, still, that's hardly a speck compared to everything that's actually out there. And yet by satisfying Damodar, Mother Yashoda gained control over Krishna, over Damodar, the source of everything, both material and spiritual. So if you have control over everything material and spiritual, what more is there to desire? You have everything. There's no longer any need. There's no longer any lack. So devotees, they don't hanker for things. They don't lament for things. By Krishna's mercy, everything that's necessary is supplied. But it's not some Pyrrhic victory. In the material world, everything is just a Pyrrhic victory. It's empty. It's hollow. Like, for instance, the holiday that we're coming upon, Christmas. Everyone's so-called favorite time of year. Why? Because you get stuff. Everyone's hoping for a lot of stuff. The more, the better. And so everyone's really happy and excited for the weeks preceding Christmas, and they can just feel the anticipation, and that anticipation is actually the peak of their happiness. Simply anticipating the satisfaction of their senses. That's more satisfying actually than actually getting, having the senses meet the objects of the senses. And then Christmas comes and they open their gifts and they're really elated. And then they wonder what's next. Then the next day everyone throws away all the wrapping paper and the boxes and all the trash. And then they throw all the presents into a closet and they're looking around like, okay, what's next? Now what? Because it didn't satisfy their desire. They're still feeling a lack. There's still some emptiness. There's some need that needs to be satisfied. Because no matter how much we try to, how many material things we try to pour into our senses, it'll never satisfy. And I've known people who have tried to the maximum of the capacity of their senses, and even beyond, just overwhelm the senses with as much sense gratification as possible. And they just pour it on year after year after year, and it never satisfies. It gets to the point to where their senses aren't even capable of experiencing any sensation. And they're still pouring on the objects of the senses, and it just produces misery. And they're suffering. Almost like a ghost. A ghost still has all the same desires that we have. They just don't have a physical body to be able to satisfy those desires. And that's ultimately what our experience is here also. We have a little bit more facility than ghosts. But ultimately, we cannot satisfy our material desires. No matter how much you engage in it, it will never satisfy. So oftentimes when materialistic people hear about spiritual satisfaction, spiritual pleasure, they think it's some hollow acquisition, something that will simply leave them feeling wanting later on, like everything else in the material world. But that's not so. That's not true at all. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, very famous verse. I recommend everyone. Actually, the first three verses are really, really nice. I'll just read the translations. Starting with text 1. O my Lord Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance and destruction of the material universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods were placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Text 2. Completely rejecting all religious activities. By the way, text 2 is the one that Prabhupada quoted in the purport for today's verse. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of the Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within the heart. In this connection, there's something worth mentioning. Prabhupada talked about in the purport. He said that he says here, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are Kaitava, false and unnecessary, near Matsaranam. Persons who are completely transcendental to the material activities of separateness, who make no distinction between mine and yours, but who simply engage in the devotional service of the Lord, are actually fit to accept Bhagavad Dharma. Because they are near Matsara, not jealous of anyone, they want to make others devotees, even their enemies. So this also ties in with 112, text 2 here. Because in text 2, it's mentioning what is the need of any other scriptures? What's the need for any of these other activities? But Prabhupada's making the point that there's a certain qualification for practicing at the highest level. Just like Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion has delineated very clearly the path, the two paths of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and Raghunuga Bhakti. Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is the practice of devotional service according to the strict rules and regulations set forth in the Shastras, in the scriptures. And those who are still tinged with material motives must follow the Vaidhisadhana path. The Raghunuga path, or Bhagavat Marg as it's also called, is for those who are liberated. For those who are liberated personalities who no longer indulge in material desires. Oftentimes, devotees, new and old alike, tend to laud the Bhagavat path, which is good. It is the highest path, but at the same time, it has to be taken in context. It has to be taken in the context that once we're properly purified, after having fully observed the rules and regulations, then we can properly follow on the Raghunuga path, on the path of spontaneous devotion, so as to not make it cheap. Because that's the thing, many people just want to make it a cheap experience under the name of, you know, under the plea of being, you know, so advanced and so liberal and so broad-minded in their understanding, that even though they're still on a conditions in a conditioned state, in their broad-mindedness, they're claiming, oh, but, you know, we're just preaching to the people and they're all really devotees, and, you know, and they're just causing a blur. Because there's three different levels of understanding. And the Kanishta understanding, in other words, in the neophyte stage, it's not possible for one to distinguish between the different types of devotees, between the different levels of realization. In fact, in the Kanishta understanding, in the neophyte stage, people have a very difficult time even understanding who other devotees are. Yes, they can understand Krishna in the temple, on the altar, but they don't have any real appreciation of other devotees. And so there's no distinction made. Advanced devotees and neophyte devotees are all lumped together by neophyte, people of neophyte mentality. Those in the Madhyam stage, in the middle stage of understanding, they recognize four different categories. They recognize Krishna, so they worship Krishna. They recognize the devotees, so they make friends with the devotees. They recognize the innocent, so they preach to the innocent. And they recognize the envious or inimical, and they avoid those who are inimical. And then those who are on the advanced platform, the Uttama Adhikari platform, they also make no distinction. But they make no distinction out of their advancement, not out of their ignorance. Because they're so advanced in Krishna consciousness, they can recognize how Krishna is sitting within the heart of all living entities, how the living entities are all jiva souls, parts and parcels of Krishna, eternally related with Krishna, spirit souls. And so they operate based upon that understanding and seeing the spiritual genuinely, not just falsely saying with the mouth, but genuinely seeing the spiritual nature of all living entities. They see how those entities are actually more advanced than they are. They view themselves as the least advanced. Whereas typically in Kanishta mentality, they view themselves as more advanced than everyone else. Just like, I may not remember it properly, so forgive my memory, but there was the example of Duryodhana and Yudhishthira. I forget who it was, but they were told, Yudhishthira was told to go and find somebody who was more advanced than him. And Duryodhana was told to find somebody, the other way around, yeah. Yudhishthira was told to find somebody less advanced than him. And Duryodhana was told to go find somebody more advanced than him. And they both came back empty-handed. Yudhishthira, after searching the whole land, explained his failure, saying, "After looking through the whole land, I couldn't find anyone that was less advanced than myself," out of his humility. And then Duryodhana, out of his false pride, he came back empty-handed and explained his failure, saying, "I searched the entire land, all the land, the water, the air, and I couldn't find anyone more advanced than me." So it's all about mentality. Duryodhana is the exemplary personification of Kanishtha mentality. Where Yudhishthira really personifies this topmost level of understanding, he sees everyone is more advanced than him. So what these people, what the Sahajas like to do, is they like to blur the distinction between neophytes, Kanishthas like Duryodhana, and very advanced devotees like Yudhishthira. They like to merge both of those together. They carry the Kanishtha mentality, but claim to have the Uttama understanding. So that's why it's so important that when we hear different teachings like this, you know, about abandoning all these other activities, that we keep it in proper perspective. We don't take this Sahaja mentality of just taking things easily and cheaply, and then under the plea of false advancement say, "Oh, even though I'm full of so many material desires, I can just completely neglect all the rules and regulations because I'm so broad-minded in my application of Krishna consciousness." So that won't get anyone anywhere. That'll simply keep one on a very low stage of spiritual realization. So that being said, text 3, final text in from the first canto. Srila Vyasadeva continues. Where is it? Here we go. "Oh, expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanates from the lips of Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls." This is going back to the point that I was making earlier, that spiritual enjoyment isn't some Pyrrhic victory. It's not just some hollow attainment. It's something that's very relishable. It's mentioning here that the Srimad Bhagavatam is so wonderful that it's nectarian to taste when one's on the conditioned state, on the conditioned platform, and it's continued to be relished by those who are liberated, even those who have already achieved the perfection of existence. It's still so relishable that even liberated souls, they still hear and recite the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's how wonderful it is. And that's the nature of Krishna consciousness, of all activities in Krishna consciousness. It's eternally relishable, and it's ever increasing. Just like in the progression of spiritual consciousness, once one gets past the stage of nishtha, where your faith becomes firmly fixed, then you begin tasting ruchi, some taste. And in this taste, it's everything you do. Every single thing you do has this amazing experience, where you just feel your heart like exploding, just feeling, "Wow, this is so incredible, this is so wonderful. I want to do more." That's ruchi, that's some taste for the service. And then once you get that taste increases, asakti, increasing taste. And then eventually that asakti, that increase of taste, develops into bhava, where it's ecstasy. It's just ecstasy at every moment, to the point where you're practically in tears. And then eventually, Krishna Prem, actually very rapidly after Bhava, Krishna Prem manifests, as described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion. And Krishna even says in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 2, Rajavidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartum Avyayam. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It's the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it's the perfection of religion. It's everlasting and it's joyfully performed. This is the nature of Krishna consciousness. It's joyfully performed. And it's not some false practice. Why? Because Krishna says right here, because it gives direct perception. Direct perception. In other words, you directly experience it. Direct perception of the self by realization. It's practical. In some places where Prabhupada explains realization, he calls it applied knowledge. You take these teachings and you apply it within your life and you see how it's actually working, and that gives realization. So it's not some blind belief. It's not just some false teaching, just something to confuse people and bewilder them into being subservient, being controlled by some manipulative book. No, these are scientific teachings. If you take them, apply them within your life, and they'll directly give you perception of your actual self. In other words, everything that's mentioned, you can actually verify firsthand. You can actually experience. And this process is joyfully performed. So, on that note, and also because the last line of today's purport is so wonderful, Srila Prabhupada says, karmis desire material happiness and jnanis desire liberation. But a devotee does not desire anything. He is simply satisfied by rendering transcendental loving service at the lotus feet of the Lord and glorifying Him everywhere by preaching, which is His life and soul. So this is the culmination of this transcendental knowledge, of this Rajavidya Rajaguyam, the king of knowledge, the king of education. So once we actually become educated with this most supreme of all knowledge, what's the natural result? We want to share it. Only a miser has something but doesn't want to share it. And the reason the miser doesn't want to share it is because he thinks that it's limited. The miser thinks that if I share this greatest of all treasures, this greatest wealth, then I'll be deficient. Then I'll be missing something. I'll be at a loss. So he's very miserly. Whereas devotees, having received this transcendental knowledge, the nature of transcendental things is that it's ever increasing. And one very wonderful thing, actually, one very wonderful quality about spiritual energy is the more you give it, the more it increases. So the more we give Krishna consciousness, the more we glorify Krishna and tell other people about Krishna, the more our realization increases also. The more our spiritual happiness increases also. So the prime method that we use for preaching in modern times is book distribution. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur called book distribution the Brihat Murdanga. Because a regular murdanga, you know, it sounds very nice. As soon as you hear the murdanga, you know, there's some kirtan going on. Let's go and relish in this wonderful experience of kirtan. But it only travels so far, one block, two blocks, maybe three blocks. Then after that, you can't hear it anymore. So only conditioned souls in a very confined space actually get the benefit of the mridanga. But a brihat mridanga, brihat means greater, a larger mridanga. Its sound reverberates across the entire globe, and it spans time. There have been so many examples of people getting these books, like one lady got one of these books back in the 70s, the mid-70s. She never read it. She had children. Her children never read it. Her children had children. And one day her grandson was in her house, and her grandson saw the Krishna book on her bookshelf. And he said, "Oh, Grandma, what's that book? I want to read it." So she gave it to him, and he became a devotee. This is the power of these books. These books are seeds. They're transcendental seeds. And we don't know where those seeds will fructify, where they'll sprout. So especially during this month, this is the month of Johnny Appleseed, transcendental Johnny Appleseed. We have to go out and plant as many seeds as possible. We don't know where those seeds will sprout, where they'll start growing. But this is our mission. Especially during this month, the Prabhupada Marathon, we have a particular goal in this month. It's posted back on that board back there. It says Transcendental Book Distribution 2012, the big thermometer there. So we can keep track of how much progress we've made. Our goal this marathon is to distribute 20,000 Bhagavad Gitas. 20,000. We're already 2 days into the marathon. No, 3 days. Today's the third? Yeah, we're 3 days into it. So we have 28 days left for 20,000 Bhagavad Gitas. So let's all partake of this wonderful process. Let's all dig deep into this ever-expanding well of divine ecstasy. And let's share this with other people. So I'll end there if there's any questions, comments. Yes.
Hello. So maybe you could clarify the seeming contradiction that the devotee is always satisfied in service, and yet that the mood of separation is considered the highest. Those two things seem to be contradictory to me, that separation is inherently dissatisfaction.
There's dissatisfaction in material separation, but there's extreme satisfaction gained in spiritual separation. In fact, not that I would know anything about this whatsoever. I'm not nearly that realized. But I have heard that even when Srimati Radharani is in the presence of Krishna, her mood of viparlamba, of separation, is so great that even when she's in direct contact with Krishna, still, she's crying in ecstasy out of separation from him, even though she's right there with him. I mean, it's totally incomprehensible to me. But that's what I've heard. So, you know, trying to understand these topmost spiritual ecstasies, it's very difficult when we're in the conditioned state. But you know, we can experience it to a certain degree. You know, as the saying goes, separation makes the heart grow fonder. So when there's something that you, or someone that you love very much, and you're separated from that person, your love and intensity of that love for that person, it grows. So experiencing that love, there's actually satisfaction there. I think Savas wanted to make a point.
There's really not any dichotomy in the sense that Krishna is always there. pure devotee of the Lord sees Krishna everywhere. But there's this mood that particular mood, they derive great ecstasy from being within that particular mood. It's like if you chant the name of Krishna, Krishna's there on your tongue. He's right there with you. But to realize that is something else. So it may seem like a dichotomy, but it's not, because they always do see the Supreme Lord. The gopis always saw Krishna. Mm-hmm. But in that particular rasa, they experience a lot of ecstasy in that mood of separation. They felt ecstasy from that. And the ecstasy is that they're always longing to be there with the Supreme Lord directly. And there's an ecstasy in that. And of course, for us to understand that would be very... hopefully one day we might get that opportunity. But because we're in a conditioned state, we think of it in terms of what we have experienced, what we, you know is to be that particular word. But for them, they're always seeing Krishna. And they're always with Krishna because they're always chanting his name.
Is that satisfactory? Okay. Anyone else? Bhakta Anthony Prabhu? Oh, that's just pretty simple. See, because ghosts, he's asking if I could go over the analogy of ghosts that I mentioned earlier. See, because a ghost is a living entity that doesn't have a gross material body. So a ghost is still conditioned, and it still has all the same desires that we have. It's just that a ghost no longer has a gross physical body in which to satisfy those desires with. So it's extremely tormenting. You know, imagine being tied down helplessly, having your whole body restrained, and then having something you desire right in front of you, but you can't have it. And no matter how much you struggle, you can't get it. That's what a ghost of the existence is like. So in the same way, we also cannot get true satisfaction of our desires either. Even though we do have a gross body, but still, even when we engage the objects of the senses with the senses, it doesn't bring the satisfaction of heart that we're desiring. It always leaves us feeling empty. That's why no matter what sense you try to satisfy with its object, you'll never feel satisfied. I've seen this so many times. It just leads to frustration. You know, that's why you take anyone who's considered like at the peak, the pinnacle of sense gratification, for whichever sense it may be. You look at them and you'll actually see that they're some of the most miserable people that you've ever met. Because they have those senses gratified to such a high degree, it brings them nothing. Just like it's mentioned elsewhere, just like the rubbing of two hands. And if you can understand how the rubbing of two hands brings no satisfaction, then you can understand how with other senses, bringing the objects in contact with the senses doesn't bring satisfaction either. It simply brings further frustration. Because by engaging in the activity of gratifying the senses, it's dulling the sense that you're using, and it's heightening the desire to use that sense by the mind. So it gets to a certain point where the desire is burning so strong like a bonfire, but yet the senses are so dulled by overuse that it can't even experience anything. And so you can see how it leads to this sort of ghostly existence. Just extreme desire, but no way of satisfying it. That's the material condition. Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.